Good morning. It is a Wednesday morning. We're with our political observer, Alan Chartok. Let's start with the results in Massachusetts, the two big races. Alan, the incumbents won. That is U.S. Senator Edward Markey defeating challenger U.S. Representative Joe Kennedy III in the Democratic Senate primary. And in the first congressional district in western Massachusetts, U.S. Representative Richard Neal held off Democratic challenger Alex Morse, in fact, beat him handily after an acrimonious primary by 20 points.
Well, 20 points is huge. It really is huge. My sense of it is that we had a really healthy, robust competition. The gloves were off. Nobody can say that it was one side in terms of the advertising. It was just remarkable. And that's what American democracy is and should be. There was a contest. The contest was resolved, and it was resolved with, as you say, David, 20 points. That's huge. Usually anything over 5 points is considered substantial, but this was really a blowout. That doesn't negate the fact that there are people who are very, very passionate about this, and you got to respect their passion. Now, if you heard Mr. Morse's concession, so-called concession speech, it didn't sound very concessionary to me. It sounded more like, I'll be back. So he tried his best, and you got to give him that. As far as Richie Neal is concerned, he showed the stuff that we at WMC have always heard him talking about on our congressional corner, as we've heard Mr. Morse talking on the congressional corner also. So we're always going to be there, open and honest brokers for people who are contesting so that people can make up their minds.
Doesn't it also point to the power of incumbency? I mean, Markey, of course, that race as well over Kennedy III.
You know, Markey won in many ways because he adopted a very progressive stance from the very beginning and was endorsed by AOC and some of her colleagues, and it really showed it to be a tremendous help to his candidacy. Let's face it, there's got to be a rationale for a contest. In the case of Richie Neal and Alex Morse, there was a sense that we are the progressives, therefore we should be elected. But 20 points is really an outstanding number of points in an election. I don't think that the Neal people felt it was going to be that high, and I'm sure they're gratified about how wide the margin was. So we just look at them and we say, okay, people have spoken.
The president spoke yesterday, went to Kenosha, where we're seeing quite a blow-up and fomenting of violence. He's blaming far-left politicians for the violence in the wake of police shooting. And, of course, we've been hearing him seemingly take the side, or at least be supportive, of Kyle Rittenhouse, the young man who killed two people while carrying a semi-automatic weapon through the streets in Kenosha.
Well, it's no secret. Trump is trying to make this an election about people's personal security. But he goes too far when he talks about somebody who uses a gun to kill people. And I think what's happened to him now is that he has been forced into a corner of the president in which he is defending the indefensible. The real question is, who will come out and vote? Will people of color, for example, come out and vote and support Joe Biden? They did in the primary elections. Biden has been fairly soft-spoken, but firm that violence is not acceptable. And he's made that clear to the American people, because if they think that the Democrat is for violence, he's done. So he's made it clear. The first thing he said when he came out the last time was, violence is unacceptable on any level. That should make an awful lot of people feel better about his candidacy. And then proceeds to talk about all the things that need to be done, which is what an election campaign is all about. So when you're talking about the president who's adverse to what's going on in the post office and Social Security and some of the other so-called entitlement programs, because a lot of us don't think they're entitlement as much as deserved. But the president is making a case for repressive measures in the United States. And it takes a lot for people to sit back and say, no, that's not so. He says he sent the National Guard in Kenosha. He did not. The governor sent the state people under his control in, and they put a stop to some of what was going on. So the president, we know, lies a lot, and he's going to continue to lie until this election is over.
Meanwhile, while the president attempts to increase his chances for re-election, we have a pandemic continuing. From CNN, coronavirus symptoms can last much longer than initially thought, experts say, and we also know experts are saying they don't fully understand the long-term effects of this disease.
No question. That's why when I walk out of the house, I am wearing a mask. It's that simple. Because so many people have died as a result of this. Tens of thousands of people have died. You would have to understand that in order to protect our children, in order to protect ourselves and our parents and grandparents, we really got to be very careful here, because we don't understand what's going to happen after the original disease happens. Young people, children, we are now finding out, have been suffering ancillary disease after they get the actual disease. And so this is something that we have no experience with, and we don't know what's going to happen in the end.
Alan, the top story in the New York Times, Russians again pushing disinformation at U.S. Facebook and Twitter. U.S. officials say the group that interfered in the 2016 election is using fake accounts and a website set up to look like a left-wing news site. The company said the revelation is the first public evidence that the group is trying to repeat its efforts from 4 years ago to help President Trump. Really, nothing new.
No, there's nothing new here. We knew it was going to happen. We said it was going to happen. It's happening. Look, for whatever reasons, we know that this president has refused to say anything really critical about Russia and about the former KGB man who was running it. He protested his love for Putin very early in the game. There are others who work in the administration who may have something semi-critical to say, but basically the Russians have come off scot-free and have not been held accountable for what they're doing. They should be, of course.
Our political observer, Alan Shartok, with us. Thanks, Alan.
And thank you, David.